good to see you. Thank you so much for spending some time with us here on Leading Edge. I'm Jeff Smith. Coming up, what's your retirement looking like after this year? What about that savings account? Can December be our saving grace? And what about 2024, an election year at that? What should we expect? We'll talk about that. But first, the Biden administration wants 50% of all new vehicle sales electric by the year 2030. That's essentially 6 years away and a tough pill to swallow for thousands of dealers across the country who aren't sold on the tech, the mandate, or the future of the industry. This week, I spoke with the president of the Ohio Auto Dealers Association, Zach Doran.
So, Zach, let's start off. Let's go back a little bit. And obviously, the six-week strike between the UAW and the Big Three. And let's Monday morning quarterback what we experienced there, what we saw. What was the overall impact on dealers you saw around the state of Ohio?
Yeah, I think you saw a few things. You know, number one, you saw one of the benefits of the franchise system. So you saw a number of dealers that obviously had been in touch with their manufacturers. They knew that this was going to be an issue. And I haven't talked to any dealers that didn't load up on parts and, you know, take more inventory than they normally would in order to take care of their customer base.
Kind of being proactive, huh?
Exactly. So especially the fast moving parts, you know, dealers understood that when these strikes take place, that obviously the plants that make parts start to shut down. They're not able to get what they need. They're not able to help their customers as a result. So they loaded up on their parts inventory in order to continue to be able to service those vehicles and, you know, for the collision centers to be able to take care of, you know, the folks who hit deer and all those kinds of things and get in accidents. So you saw a lot of that. You also saw the inventory levels, you know, drop a little bit. They had begun to recover and, you know, they kind of subsided a little bit. That was a little more maybe franchise specific, different manufacturers and different franchisors, dealers have been impacted differently as it relates to how much inventory they have on the ground. And so, especially if you were one of the big three, or one of the, you know, that's referred to as the big three, you know, those folks were adversely impacted as it relates to their parts inventory, especially, but a lot of them, you know, tried to compensate for that before things really got ramped.
And I was going to say, Zach, too, this all obviously coming on the back end of going through the pandemic, the supply chain issues. I mean, there had to have been moments you're just sitting there going, my goodness, what else do we have to put up with at this
point? Yeah, it's been a very unique time the last few years for dealers, whether it's, you know, used car inventory or parts or, you know, new car inventory. And it's, you know, we've seen things in the last 3 years that we haven't seen in the last 20 years. So. But our, you know, our members are adapting and responding, and they're hanging in there.
So Zach, I wanted to talk to you a little bit. We kind of exchanged emails through the course of the week, but I wanted to talk to you a little bit about what we saw earlier in the week as we move forward, what it means. 4,000 dealers across the U.S. signing on a letter saying they are asking, they are begging, they are pleading for the Biden administration to pause on this push for EVs. And as you go back, and just to bring people up to speed, we're talking about an administration that is looking to be 50% EV sales by 2030, which you look, I mean, that's not a whole heck of a lot of time that we're talking about right here. And Zach, I was also going through just individual car makers, and 2030 is kind of a benchmark. I think a few of the big three, maybe Chevy, looking at 2035 for implementing this. But from an OADA standpoint, how realistic is this? And we've heard from dealers, they're not happy with it even up here in the Toledo area.
Yeah, it's not realistic. You know, that's the short answer. You know, we're almost into 2024. The average vehicle on the road today is 12 years old. And in Ohio, our market share of battery electric vehicles is somewhere between 2-3%. So the leaps and bounds that need to happen are just, the timing doesn't make sense. And there's a host of reasons for that. But, you know, I think what you see...
Let me ask you real quick. Is there a good time? Because it's going to take time, right?
Potentially, yeah, there is potentially a good time, but it needs to be consumer-led. And, you know, that's what I think you heard our dealers across the country telling the Biden administration. And it's a similar talk track and a similar effort to, you know, the way that we've operated and the way that our National Auto Dealers Association has operated in trying to push back and saying, look, guys, too far, too fast right now. The consumer demand is not there. Certainly there was a line of some early adopters that loved that technology. You know, we're the letter that in particular that you're referencing is very positive towards EVs. It's, you know, we've got, I think as of 2025, there'll be north of 140 different electric vehicle models made by traditional automakers across the country. So it's not a supply issue. But you know, what those dealers are saying is, hey, we can't let government mandates tell people what they have to drive. And, you know, for folks that drive pickup trucks, they're concerned about towing. And for folks that, you know, want to drive to Disney World, they're concerned about how they're going to make that trip when they have to stop for a significant period of time. There's infrastructure concerns. Consumers in hot and cold climates are seeing, you know, the reduction of the mileage that they can get out of a fully electric charge. And so
just to bring our viewers up to speed, does it cost more for Ohio dealers to have EVs on their lots? They have to provide, I'm sure, the training as far as the garages are concerned and the technicians who are working on these vehicles.
They do. And dealers are very accustomed to responding to the requirements that they need in order to sell and service vehicles. That's nothing new. That's been happening for a long time. And so, you know, they're ready on their end. But the dealer's job when a consumer shows up at the dealership is to help sell them a vehicle that they want and that they need and that fits their needs and their lifestyles and their budget. And, you know, right now, as a whole, electric vehicles are significantly more expensive and they're not checking the boxes that consumers want to have checked when they go in to purchase a vehicle. And as a result, it's just, you know, the demand right now is not there. And that's why you saw the letter come out that just said, hey, look, we're in touch with the customer. We talk to these people every day. We're going too far and a little too fast right now. And we've got to slow these mandates down so that we don't all end up trying to jam vehicles on our consumers that they don't want. And that's not good for anyone.
Zach, we got about a minute left in our interview. Once again, Zach Doran from the Ohio Automobile Dealers Association joining us here on Leading Edge. Zach, we kind of got the gist from dealers here locally just saying that when they bring these cars in, they're sitting. Is that happening around the state as well?
It is. Yeah, it is. The average day supply is basically double that of the internal combustion engine vehicles nationwide. And so that's sort of the measurement that we use to determine, hey, are these moving or are they?
But I do want to point out as well, there has been significant investment from GM specifically here in Toledo outfitting its propulsion systems plant. And that equals jobs. And I mean, that has been something. But I think what I'm hearing from you is just that's trying to speed up a process that just can't be sped up right now.
Yeah, you know, I think there's just a number of things that have to happen in order for the supply, the gap between the supply and the consumer demand to shrink. And that's what we need to have.
Zach Doran there joining us. We do need to mention, locally speaking, GM has already pumped millions, as I said, millions upon millions into plants in Defiance and Toledo, committing to turning away from the internal combustion engines and focusing on that EV technology. In addition, battery plants and technology were parts of the UAW's contract with the Big Three just weeks ago, once again showing there may be continued push from the companies and the unions and pull from the dealerships and the customers. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back here on Leading Edge. My name is Jeff Smith once again. How's your 2023 been financially? The Fed has tried so many things to try to get inflation under control, raising interest rates time and time again. So while that may be great news for savings accounts, not so good for other elements of the economy. So glad to have my friend Alan Lance joining me here this week. It's been a while since we've been able to do this, sit down and have a conversation. But I wanted to have you in just to kind of, I guess, Monday morning quarterback what we've gone through in 2023. And before we came out from the commercial, I said, Alan, 2023 going into it was going to be what?
Well, 23, we came off of a couple years in a row of bonds going down because interest rates started edging up. And that put pressure on the stock market. So 2022, the stock market was down, went down severely, and that created an opportunity. So we thought 23 was a good chance for the market to rebound. Mm-hmm. And that's what happened. It was still negative for bonds. The last 3 years have been the worst period for bonds in the history of the country.
No kidding.
So yeah, if you bought a 30-year treasury at 1% 2-3 years ago, you'd be down 15% in principal, and you're getting 1% for the next 28 years. And it did make sense to have that kind of risk for 1% return. Stocks, on the other hand, 7 months straight up, 23, 3 months down, went down about 10% as far as August, September, October. November, best November in history. So it made up those 3 months of losses. We're back to where we were at the highs in July.
What does that say, obviously, sitting here now in December, and I don't know what ebbs and flows we're dealing with. We could very easily end on a down note, but what's your kind of pulse taking on what, I guess, investors are thinking?
Yeah, the whole key is interest rates. Interest rates have gone down. They started the month of November around 5% on a 10-year. They're 4.25 now. If you noticed, energy prices have gone down, so that gives the consumer more money. It's almost like a tax break. And those have been the positive catalysts for the stock market. So, again, it flows, ebbs and flows, and goes to extremes. So I think, you know, if we continue to go up in December, Jeff, mm-hmm. we're borrowing from 2024 gains.
And we've heard from the Fed, you know, kind of a cautious pullback on the rate increases. What does that mean going forward?
Well, that's what's happening is now everybody's predicting that there'll be rate cuts in 2024. And I think that's getting over-exaggerated. So I think 24 will be more challenging year. And you're going to have these ebbs and flows. And if the market continues to go up, we would lessen risk and reduce exposure. On the other end of the spectrum, there's a lot of stocks that haven't done that much. You know, Apple and Microsoft the last 10 years have done 25 and 26% annually, respectively, while you've got like a Ford that the last 10 years has lost money. You know, mm-hmm. Owens, Illinois has lost 7% a year the last 10 years. So you got to be in the right areas. I think tech with AI is still a good area, but we wouldn't chase it because it's up so much, you know. Yeah. So there's no way Apple, Microsoft, NVIDIA can do these gains of 25, 30% a year the next 10 years. They're just too big now. So it's a matter of finding the right strategy and not taking risk. And when you take risks, make sure you get rewarded for it.
Let me ask you this from a perspective of what you see day in and day out. Once again, Alan Lance joining us talking about finances in 2023 and going into 2024. But when you look at the old guard, some of the names that you threw out there, you talk Ford, you talk OI, you talk Owens Corning, some of those that are more familiar right. to these parts. But what is, the sentiment, the mind thinking as far as those companies being able to show real gains in this climate, in this future, what we're looking at?
Yeah, I think it's challenging. I mean, if you look at Ford, you know, your previous segment, you know, talking about the money they spend EV and there's not the demand, you know, it's consumer demand. You can't force consumers to buy. So they've spent all this money and you're not going to get that back. And when you got something like AI, where that's going to be productive gains that can be fed across the board from healthcare to whatever sector, that's why we still feel comfortable with technology. Mm-hmm. Healthcare, it's getting hit, you know, different corners.
We've seen that locally, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So you know, those are areas that you have to be careful of, you know. Mm-hmm. Energy, it depends on the economy. You know, I was just, you know, went through Europe, and I still think U.S. is a better place to invest. We still see the Europeans wanting to invest in the U.S., both real estate, stocks, everything.
Let me stop you there and ask for some of those who maybe are more aggressive as far as their 401k approach is concerned. And when you look at going international, you just returned from an international trip where you were seeing how things are overseas. But with all the unrest, with all the uncertainty, going into an election year, Alan, I mean, what is the smart play?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of risk internationally, even though it's underperformed for 10 years. You know, I still think U.S., because of that technology advantage, if you look at Europe, they're so dependent on others for energy. And us being free of that burden, I think, you know, U.S. is still a better place and lower risk. Geopolitically, there's just so much going on. Again, it's added levels of risk, like you're saying. So why take that risk of going, you know, overseas? So, so again, I think the smart investor, even though, you know, technically you could say, you know, international's underperformed, time to get in, I still think it's too early, and that's why we made that trip, just to confirm what we thought initially.
So. I hate to use this phrasing, but do you take stock in seeing companies like Intel doing what it's doing down in the central part of the state?
Yeah, I mean, Intel's you know, starting to recover. They've had some lean years, and you know, they're doing the right things.
But is it another Ford factor where you see investment? Will there be that return?
Well, we're not. We haven't invested in Intel because of that reason. You know, because again, it's risk. You know, they have to execute to really pay off. I'd rather have a company that's executing already and then has other verticals to expand to, so you know that growth is there. With Intel, you're betting on that the new management will execute, and you know that's part of that, the game of risk in stocks.
While I had you here today, I also wanted to take a moment, and once again, we invite everybody, if you miss any part of this, check out the podcast. It's available. You can listen to it in your car. Alan, you can listen to it afterwards. But talk a little bit about 24, and as we head into a general election year. I know over the years we've talked about how this creates concern sometimes, how it creates excitement.
Yeah, I think we're going to have volatility into 2024, you know, not only geopolitically, but, you know, politically, U.S., you know, on a domestic front. So take advantage would be my advice of that volatility. So if the market continues to go up, reduce your risk, build some cash up so you can buy when you have those periods. Same thing, the market goes down, you know, interest rates aren't going to go down as much as what people thought as we go into 2024, which I think will happen because I think they're still worried about inflation, and the market takes a hit. Then selectively buy those companies that are industry leaders that show yearly gains income-wise with their dividend increases, so that you're not relying just on the stock market, but you're getting some income if the market doesn't do as well as it did in 2023.
Final question. We have these stories every single day here on the set, and we talk about this faction's telling us the economy is back. This faction's telling us it's not back. How do you glean any of that?
It's very difficult. You know, you got to like maneuver here a fine line with the Fed, you know, not increasing interest rates enough to push us into the economy. Mm-hmm. So it's called a soft landing. You know, it's very seldom as far as landed that way. But, you know, I think there's a chance. And, you know, I think if it is, it's AI and these other areas that are going to lead us, you know, so we don't fall into a deep recession.
Alan Lance, good to see you again, my friend.
Likewise.
Thanks for coming on. We appreciate it. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back. We here at WTOL 11, we are counting down the days before an annual effort close to the heart here at our station, our Gift of Joy toy drop. We are collecting new unwrapped toys for babies all the way to teens, but it is without a doubt one of our favorite days of the year. Kevin Milliken from Lucas County Children's Services, our partner in all of this, and has been over the last couple of years. This is a great day we're looking forward to.
It sure is. And, you know, when people drive through the parking lot, I mean, with trailer loads of toys, it's like it's got to be a good feeling on that end. I'm on the other end, where you guys are so busy running a truck back and forth. me and the high school toy teams are unloading all that and then getting it up to the toy room throughout the day. But you know what? It is an exhausting day, but it's a good time.
Yeah. Let's bring people up to speed, if they don't know already, just the effort that exists and where these toys are going and why they are so needed.
We will serve 2,000, maybe a little bit more, children this year.
It's within the system.
Yes, it's up slightly from last year at this time. And so with the need being greater, the need for the toys are being greater. Our mission really is to give kids in foster and kinship care as normal a childhood as we can. And with your help and with your sponsor's help and everybody that pitches in, the holidays are the one time where we can make it the most normal we possibly can. Yeah. Will we have some extra toys? Probably, but those become birthday presents throughout the year, again, to help a child celebrate a birthday that without that, would they get it?
Yeah, each and every year, and I know it's one of the, there are emotions when you're standing out in our parking lot, seeing just people who may stop in, may roll down their window, and they may have two or three things to hand us. Now, don't get me wrong, there are those who bring 50 to 100 things to hand us, but it's the two and three that maybe don't get talked about as much,
but are
so impactful
and you
in
know
what we're trying to do.
People's ability to give, you know. There are the old biblical stories with, you know, somebody who's the equivalent of a millionaire gives 10% of his wealth. Is he worth more than somebody who gave their last penny?
Exactly.
Absolutely not. And it means a lot to those people. And some of those people have stories to tell. Mm-hmm. A lot of times when I get a phone call, when somebody wants to do a drive, I'll give you a great example. We had a young man call us from BW. He was an assistant manager a couple years ago, and they got involved. He's a former foster kid. That's 6 degrees of separation, if you will, in almost every phone call that we get.
Sure. What has stood out to you over the last couple of years? Maybe something that comes to mind.
The generosity of Northwest Ohio, bar none.
Yeah.
We're the type of community that we're not looking necessarily for the tax write-off or the humble brag on social media. This is the type of community that if they see a cause in a convenience store with a collection jar, they're going to reach in their pocket and drop a 20 and not think a darn thing about it.
Kevin, I want to share the details. Remember, you can help the Gift of Joy toy drop. It is Thursday, coming up on Thursday from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. And go to WTOL.com for more information. Kevin, thank you so much.
Thank you. Appreciate the opportunity.
Look forward to it. We'll be back. Once again, so appreciate you spending some time with us. If you missed any part of our interview, you can check it out on our WTOL 11 YouTube page. And also, where you get your podcasts, check it out. Leading Edge for this week.